Lineouts. Racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles. Dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, this week, as you can probably see, we have a special guest. It's a man that knows the South African rugby landscape just about top to bottom because he's got his hands dirty at grassroots level for a number of years. He also knows the comings and goings and dealings at the upper echelons of the game. But primarily, we'll be chatting to him about grassroots rugby and club rugby in particular, which is a subject that we don't often, one of the guilty parties here, don't often sort of sink our teeth into. But thankfully today, Brad Geimer of Pirates Rugby Club, the much famed Pirates Rugby Club in Johannesburg, he joins us to give us some insights, not just from a club rugby perspective, but he also comes with vast experience in terms of marketing and sponsorship in sports. Brad, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, morning, gents. Great to be here. Thanks for having me. Super excited.
I hope that intro more or less vaguely paints a picture of what you do.
Very, very flattered. Thank you very much. Just another guy, grassroots rugby, trying to make things work out.
Now, I mentioned the word or the phrase that I've been talking about, the grassroots rugby and how you get your hands dirty. Obviously, a lot of people involved at that end of the sport do it for the passion, do it for that you want to see the game develop, you want to see the game grow, sort of cultivate the love for the sport, even from a young age. Just give us a sense of how long you've been involved in grassroots rugby.
Geez, Liam, a long time now, eh? So I've been going down to Pirates since I was 6 years old, born and bred in the area. So Pirates has been in my blood and in my family's blood ever since then.
And Conversions still counted 1 point back then, didn't it?
Say that again, sorry?
Conversions counted 1 point or something.
Back. Yeah, I think they did. And trials were 3 points or something like that. There was a leather rugby ball, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Played at school in the area, went down to the club on a regular basis. Started playing there under 20s in 94, 95. Finished school in 95 and played my under 21 rugby there until 99. Had one season of seniors before going off to New Zealand and the UK for a bit to go and play, work, travel, all that kind of goodness. Came back in 2006 with the family. Straight back to the club was the first place I went to. And got involved in the administration side of things in around 2013. So been there ever since from an admin perspective.
Brad, you've obviously, as you've said now, you've been involved for a long time now. Just the way club rugby has changed over the advent of professionalism. Then I think, if I remember right, clubs went through the stage where they were trying to be semi-professional. They tried to pay players as well, and that didn't really work long term. And now it's become amateur quite again. Although some clubs are, as I'm sure you'll point out, some of the clubs we see around are semi-professional anyway. But just that change, and how's it gone over the last 20 years for you guys, especially from Pirates' point of view?
Look, I think in general, Brendan, clubs have always been in that semi-professional mind state. I think whether you're getting 50 Rand in a brown envelope back in the day, or you're getting 100 Rand in a brown envelope today, I think there's still that semi-professional approach to the game. There is money in the game, in the ecosystem. There definitely is, without a doubt. I think it depends on what the club's attitude is towards that. At Pirates, what we try and do is work through our network of old boys and girls just to see whether we can actually help these guys long-term with jobs and the likes and mentorships and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, look, I think not a lot has changed for me other than the fact that we don't have the professional players playing in the game. I remember back in the day watching Pirates versus the then Rao, now UJ, on a Wednesday night in 1996, where we had some of the World Cup winning players in that game, to today really just being guys that have either finished Varsity Cup or finished their professional careers and are coming back into the game. So from a administrative perspective, off the field, not much has changed. On the game, on the field, I think it's just still the same level and standard that we've come to expect.
To what degree did that put a dampener on club rugby? The fact that your professional players or provincial players, even Springboks, don't play club rugby. When I say dampener, I mean in terms of new players potentially joining clubs and also how you attract fans to the club.
Yeah, Liam, I'm not too sure it has. Obviously, the excitement around having a Springboks involved on the field is always there. And in the past, in the recent history, where we've had a couple of guys that have come back, returned to play protocols and got involved in the club game once or twice, certainly added value and excitement. But I think the one thing about club rugby and the amateur game is that people are passionate about their club and they go down regardless to watch the game. I think I'm experiencing some of the biggest crowds that we've had at Pirates in recent years. Some of the big derby games, recently played Raiders a couple of weeks ago, easily 2,500 people there. So the amount of people that are still coming down and supporting the game within the community space is still big. I don't think it's really had too much of an impact.
And on that score, it's a conversation we had recently about some of the reasons why people are coming back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to do with what's happening at the club, but actually higher up the food chain.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think what the Box are doing at the moment is certainly getting a lot of people excited about the game, both men and women. What we're seeing is an increased number of people coming down. 750 kids from the age of under 6 to under 18 registered at Pirates to play the game. We've got just over 200 senior boys from under 19 to first team registered. We've got a significant amount of old boys that are playing again, believe it or not, as well, including that number. But I think one of the most exciting things for me and the biggest elements of growth is on the women's game. We've got about 40 registered women's players that are coming from all walks of life and different sports at the moment, touch rugby, hockey, all sort of making that move across to play rugby. And that's something that I'm very excited about.
I was going to say, I mean, one of the things for me, and I mean, obviously they've been Pretoria and you guys in Joburg, but I've been to Pirates enough times to know that part of the allure of or the draw card for Pirates is you guys have an exceptional bar over there. I'm not going to lie. It's a very nice bar to come visit.
Well, Prop. Honey, that you spotted that.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was kind of hard to miss. But just, I think somewhere in other parts of the country, part of the thing that was lost and as you say, is rebuilding in a lot of ways, is just that clubs were always community. And we see across the world, a lot of the clubs are community-based. In a big, sprawling city like Joburg, it's not often easy to build a club like that from a community. How have you guys got it right?
Yeah, Brendan, I think 100%. For me, it's about the environment. So you've got to work hard on your environment. You've got to make sure that you understand who your clientele are and what they're looking for. And I think one of the biggest things we worked on very hard at Pirates is to make sure that it's a safe space for women and children. We know if women and children are happy to come down there, then the men will come and they'll follow and they'll stay a little bit longer and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's absolutely critical that it's got to be that. You know, it's got to be a community-based club for the family. So the focus we put on family at the club has certainly seen a massive change for the club. Yeah, we got the bars. Yeah, the guys like to have fun. But, you know, we're seeing a massive increase of the amount of moms and kids and families that are coming down and enjoying those facilities as well. So environment is absolutely key.
And what we've seen at Pirates is indicative of what's happening at a lot of other clubs around the country. Surely there are some spin-offs and benefits and sort of knock-on effects, if you pardon the pun, that clubs now benefit from with a bit more income that they're able to generate through maybe sponsorships.
Yeah, look, I think sponsorships are always a tough one in the community space, or have been a tough one in the community space historically, I think, Liam. I think what's happening now is that people are starting to, brands and other businesses are starting to look at this space from an ultra-localization perspective. And how do I get my brand in front of somebody? How do I have a direct conversation with the likes of a Brendan and Liam, who are potentially my clients, versus just putting it up in the echelons and hoping that it works? I think that one-on-one engagement that brands are enjoying in the community space, not only at clubs like Pirates, but across, has been very interesting to see lately. Some interesting brands getting involved. I know Hollywood Bets Nationwide has been significantly involved through their foundation and giving back. I know that we're very blessed to bring We Buy Cars on this year, and the one-on-one engagements that they're looking for has been exceptionally good. So yeah, the more people you attract are the right kind of people, if you understand who your audience is or your membership base is, you know, you can find those local brands that can get involved. You know, those national brands are looking to get involved more and more and more now.
Yeah, I may knock on their door soon for there needs to be a change of wheels.
Good experience so far for me, let me tell you, I'm in that process.
Okay.
Just on Brad's, well, maybe a bit of a bigger picture. I mean, Willem Strauss, who you know pretty well, I'm sure, does a lot also in the club rugby space here in Pretoria. Big champion of club rugby. Yeah, sent out a thing the other day saying that 1 billion rand is spent amongst the school rugby system, which I can believe if you take the top, 100 schools in this country and their rugby programs and what they spend on coaching and just how professional some of them are. But part of the question there is we spend all that money at schoolboy level. We have an amazing schoolboy system. But somewhere between that, from those all those schoolboys that come through, only probably about 2 or 3, 4% probably make it to the professional ranks. So we lose a lot of players after school, and I'm sure you know this very well. How do you get those players back, and what more can be done, I suppose, from that amazing schoolboy system to club rugby to that just that middle bit there that we seem to lose a lot of players?
Yeah, Brendan, I think it's about awareness. Eh? Like I said to Liam the other day, club rugby's gone nowhere. It's been around ever since. You know, it survived two world wars, COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So it hasn't gone anywhere. I think a responsibility of the club, if you're looking for that kind of sustainability, is to create the awareness in that school system. So remind the boys that, listen, if you don't make Varsity Cup, if you don't become a professional rugby player, there's another pathway here. And then to help them through that pathway and to engage with your unions and let them know if there's a quality rugby player that's come through the system and to try and get those kids every opportunity to get involved. Last year, we worked very, very hard through our under-19 coaches. Two of the boys from that under-19 system had a crack at under-19s, Issa and Brandon. Both had a very, very good opportunity with under-19s. Regrettably, two injuries came in there, which scuppered that a bit. But Issa was going to go and potentially start in the under-19 Curry Cup final. So I don't think that pathway is dead, but we just need to work harder as clubs and connect to schools. That's something that we've done incredibly well, and we focus on it. Like at under-19 and under-21 level, we try and employ schoolboy coaches so that there's always that link back into the schools and there's awareness there. And something that we've done for the last 11, 12 years is actually run what's called the Pirate School Challenge, where there's local schools in the area. We've just taken their friendly, put a value on it, host them under lights, which a lot of schools don't have the opportunity to do. And they get to play for under-19s the back end of the year. But what that does is it creates the link. So even if they finish schoolboy and they head off to Varsity Cup or professional rugby, that we know they'll circle back to us at some stage. And we're seeing the fruits of their labor as well. And obviously work very hard on your junior rugby structures. I think that maybe in this case, your youth rugby structures. So, you know, again, some of the boys that are playing from under 6 to under 18 end up at the various schools, have very successful careers at the school, then go off to Varsity, all that kind of stuff. But once they've finished all of that, they circle back to the club. And I suppose it's just that constant awareness, constant in your face, constant driving, the marketing in that space will certainly help.
If club rugby is going to increase its prominence, improve its prominence in the rugby ecosystem, how closely is that linked to shifts in things like global season that we've heard about so often? Because clearly there's a very limited time frame, and we also have to look then obviously at pipeline. Yep. Is it necessarily that closely linked to what happens higher up the food chain?
I think the community game or the club game is quite flexible, Liam. I think we've had various starts to the seasons, various finishes to the seasons. It's always been in a window from sort of April to September and whatever it looks like in between. I think it doesn't really get affected by what happens above. If anything, opportunities open up for the club rugby to be more exposed. So you think about South African rugby recently moving north. What it's done is in that off-season, in that May-June period, has left a complete white space for clubs to be exposed through TV broadcast because there's nothing happening over that period. So I think, if anything, they'll benefit from any new structures that come in, without a doubt in my mind. So as long as everyone else above kind of realizes what's happening there as well.
The one thing, I'm just going back to my point about the schoolboy rugby, and I suppose when you talk about pipelines, those players that do go up there, and it's almost an anomaly when you see every now and again, you see a report about ex-professional player coming back through the club rugby, and it's always treated as almost like Christmas at the club type thing because so-and-so has now played. And New Zealand's the same. Dan Carter plays in the club game and everybody goes, wow. Part of the thing that the professional coaches probably say, and I mean, there's obviously limitations being not being professional, is that the fitness levels aren't the same. The conditioning, the fact that the guys obviously have jobs and they have to work and they're not full-time rugby players also contributes to that. Is there a way of bridging that at all in the long run? I mean, and making sure that more of these club players, because if we have to really count the amount of club players that actually get that chance to go higher, Marco van Staden's one of them. He came through the club ranks as well. But they're very few and far between. And it just, you get the sense sometimes, maybe not for the big four franchises, but maybe for the other 10 franchises around the country, there is a pathway for those guys if they only get seen.
Yeah, Brendan, absolutely. I think, you know, by and large, most of these club guys are training at their clubs on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Three times a week is sort of the average. In saying that, there are other clubs that are training five, six times a week in preseason and trying their hardest to kind of get as fit as they possibly can, particularly where you're playing against the universities, of which we have three in our league. And in order to compete with those universities, you have to increase your fitness. It's as simple as that. I think the responsibility doesn't only sit on the clubs to get these guys fit. Massive role. One of our biggest investments in it is our S&C coach, who's absolutely fantastic. But there's an onus on the boys as well. The boys and girls are wanting to go higher. Part of the professional game is mental as well. And if you've got that mental strength to go and train on your own, do the extras, put in the extra yards, understand what it takes, so on and so forth, I think you're going to be in a position to do it. And then I think where the clubs help you is to drive awareness around who you are and what you do. Clubs can do that by inviting the coaches down from various unions to come down and watch the games, of which most union coaches and administrators do come down and do. They club men and women in the past as well. So I think there's that opportunity to do it, but there's got to be a willingness to do it. I think given the fact that you can only contract so many players, you know, for me, it's an obvious choice. I can have the biggest base of players linked to my professional franchise or to my union in the world if I work very closely with the clubs. And when I have an injury, there are certain ways of bringing people into that position from club rugby into the professional ranks. And then vice versa, return to play scenarios, back into play and using the clubs to do that. So it's not the skill level. The skill level is right up there, Brendan. It's the skill level of some of these guys and girls is phenomenal. It's just purely that 1% extra fitness level that they've got to work on.
What we've seen in Joburg is that there's been, obviously the universities have sort of ruled the roost for any number of years because of what they do and have to do in Varsity Cup. But what we've seen is some of the open clubs close that gap the last couple of years. Why do you think there has been that shift? Because they're far more competitive and it looks like, you know, on any given night or day, an open club can roll a university.
You know, Liam, for me, it's the obvious one. I love the Varsity Cup for a number of different reasons. But most importantly, these guys go through intense programs for about 4 or 5 years and they finish, what now it's 24, but they used to finish at 25 years of age. But they come out of their athletes. When you're 24, 25, you're in your prime. Or you haven't even hit your prime if you're in the front row. And these guys just want to carry on playing. So if they're not getting selected into the provinces and like that, so these guys and girls just want to carry on playing rugby. And we see a lot of guys that come from the varsity setups into our club over the years, not only locally, but guys that are moving from the likes of Picker and UCT and Marty's up to Joburg for work. They want to carry on playing. And again, it talks back to that environment. If you can offer the environment, you can be a competitive space, you make sure you're not wasting these guys' time from a coaching perspective and a playing perspective on a Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, then they're going to stick and they're going to play and they're going to play for another 5 years minimum. And I think that's the exciting thing for me. If you think about it that way, then you have sustainable relationships with universities. And I think those guys coming out of the age of 24, 25, playing for club rugby haven't lost anything. They just a year older and a little bit more experience. And that's what we're seeing. It's effectively varsity players, former varsity players playing against current varsity players, which is great.
Brad, I'm going to throw a curveball here. If you had one wish for your club from not just SA Rugby, but maybe the Lions, et cetera, in the whole ecosystem, that you, one thing you could change right now, what would it be to help the clubs out?
I was going to ask that question in a not a roundabout way, maybe a subtle way. I was still thinking of the wording, but thanks for jumping in there first, Brendan.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Look, I'm going to put media and all that kind of stuff into this answer if I can as well now. And I think it's about exposure, guys. I think people need to turn their heads, unions, Springboks, media, everyone, just turn their heads towards the community game. You know, we're constantly searching for stories, searching for good news stories, et cetera, et cetera. And I think if everyone was just to turn their heads towards the community game and see what's going on there, I think we're going to be blown away what's happening countrywide. The kind of attendances that are happening at club games in the Eastern and Western Cape at the moment, the kind of talent that's sitting there, it just needs a lens on it. I think we need to get organized. If I ask from the unions, we need to get a little bit more organized on a national level. There's a lot of these little, when I say little, some of them actually quite big, tournaments popping up all over the country. Soldwana coming up in Easter this weekend. You go and watch what's going on there and put a lens on that. I think we're going to be blown away by the amount of people that are going to be in stadium watching that. And I think if we're just reporting on it a lot more, then I think people are going to start flooding back to the club scene and trying to understand it.
Brad, thanks very much for your time. I don't have anything more to ask you. You have shared generously. Thank you for those insights. Brendan, I don't know if you
I think we can just reach the what we spoke about before we had this chat was just the sponsorship just in general. Brad, you obviously, people don't know, your main day job involves a lot of sponsorships and negotiating these sort of things. And just from a level there, just maybe where the Springboks are at the moment, just what you see from your point of view and just how that affects everybody else straight down the line, down the pipeline.
Yeah, really. I'm encouraged to see where the Springboks are right now. I really am from a sponsorship commercial perspective. I really am. I think they have really thought about what they're doing, what their commercials look like, how they're trying to achieve that. I'm impressed with how they are structured as a federation at the moment, and they've understand their value from top to bottom. And they're really thinking about the long-term sustainability of their product and their brand. I think they're in a good space. I really do. I think there's a lot of cool engagements happening. And I think as a result of that, and obviously coupled with the on-field performances in the last couple of years, tough season coming up, but there's just constant players and pipelines coming through. But I think coupled with what's happening on and off the field at the moment within that space, I think it's incredibly positive, something that South Africans will be proud of and excited about, I suppose, more than anything else. And what I'm incredibly proud of to see and happy to see is how many of those brands that are getting behind the Springboks are South African-based, and South African-based businesses that are wanting to get behind a South African brand, which is incredibly exciting for me. So no, look, Brendan, I think it's really positive. And again, I think there's that knock-on effect all the way down. So as Springboks carry on doing well, hopefully in the URC level, in the club level, and the franchise level, and down to club level, brands are going to actually understand that they need to leverage further down to really get those touch points. So look, I'm very impressed with where they are at the moment. Very buoyant is the word I'm using at the moment within my team, and incredibly positive to see how they're approaching in quite a modern and mature way, I suppose. And look, excited to be working with them.
I was going to say, modern and mature is not something you can talk about rugby administrators in every sentence, but it's good to hear they're doing that. Because as you say, I mean, Brad, the other thing is, I mean, we've seen the other side of it. We've seen when Springbok rugby's been right at the bottom, and we've seen how brands have run away from Springbok rugby at times, and well, not just in rugby in general. So this is, I suppose, the golden years. We have to use it while we can.
Yeah, Brendan, the one thing I was talking to someone last night about this, the difference between a European fan and a South African fan, or a South African fan in the rest of the world is vast. You know, that fandom, that passion that comes through from South Africans is absolutely mad. And you can walk into a room and someone could turn around and go, I'm the biggest fan of so-and-so team, et cetera, et cetera. And then you ask, when last did you even go to their stadium? No, I was there 20 years ago. You're not really a fan. Then there's these ups and downs and swings and roundabout moments that any team goes through in any sport. And I think what we see in Europe, when Wales are still filling the principality, despite their run at the moment, that's a fan, that's a supporter. Versus what we potentially see here when our teams aren't performing as well as what they want to. There's an expectation from South Africans that we always have to be winning in order for us to support them. And I think if we can change that attitude of fans, brands, all that kind of stuff, then you're going to see sustainability. And I don't see anyone touching South African sport, let alone rugby, going forward, because the power that we have and the amount of brands that want to get involved in sport is definitely there. But it's just this constant cycle of, they're not doing well, we're not going to support them either from a brand or a fan perspective. That mindset needs to change. And through thick and thin, we've got to back the teams that we've chosen to back and just constantly drive. And then you'll see the sustainability come through.
Last one for me, and speaking about fans and then speaking about you've got a bit of a link with New Zealand. So will you be in Auckland and Wellington later this year?
Yeah, one hopes, eh? With good planning, absolutely. You know, to go down and see.
I thought it would be straightforward for you, a man of your position that you find yourself in.
Oh, no, listen, no. With good planning, we'll be there, right? It's obviously a tough test, eh? And looking forward to that one. Those particular games in Park and Wellington, I wish they were playing it the other way around, but in Wellington, I think is a precursor to what's coming next year in that greatest rivalry. It is a build-up of note, and I think it's going to be one of the toughest of the games this season. I think those two test matches back-to-back. Although, listen, Australia coming to South African shores, they've got the British and Irish Lions coming up this year. Been watching a bit of Super Rugby, seeing what's going on there. There's some positive things happening in that rugby space, so in that Australian space. So, yeah, it's going to be an exciting season, and hope to see you boys there.
Mm. And then there's the Ireland and France at the end of the year, so it's an interesting year.
It's tough. And then, it's tough. Bobos, all that kind of stuff, it's tough.
It's going to be a big year for us all. No, Brad, listen, thanks for your time. I really enjoyed chatting to you. And hopefully some other brands see this and go down to Pirates for a beer and then chat further.
Right, thanks for your insights. Appreciate it. And thank you for what you're doing for rugby. I mean, it's often it's thankless often. So thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah, short-lived. Thanks, Brendan. I remember there's an army of us doing it. Eh? There's volunteers all over the country, left and breadth, that are doing this and do it for the passion and the love of it. Eh? So I'm just one of many who are doing this. So super proud to be part of it. Thank you for having me.
Must admit, Liam, that's probably a part of rugby we don't pay enough attention to. To be honest, there's so much other rugby going on, and you just have to look at the weekend, like this past weekend. There was 16 games in Europe, to just concentrate. I'm not even talking about the SA Cup and everything else, and the Sevens that was on at the same time. So,
but I mean, this is a complete and utter hangover still from the changeover from amateur rugby to professional rugby back in the day. And I think we are all guilty of this. All the space in newspapers, time on the airwaves were pretty much dedicated to provincial rugby, and club rugby also had its share. It was obviously wildly popular back then, but it also then was sort of backed up by prominent space in newspapers, community newspapers, as well as mainstream, and then, on the radio and sometimes on television. That all changed with the advent of professionalism and also South Africa's reintroduction to international sport, because suddenly everything shifted. Those column inches dedicated to the Springboks, to Bafana Bafana, to the Proteas, and everything else, a lot of stuff slipped off the page, and club rugby, unfortunately, was one of the unfortunate victims, and it hasn't quite regained its prominence in terms of the space it used to occupy in the media.
Yeah, I mean, I think worldwide local news has taken a backward step, and newspapers, media has declined. So, I mean, we're part of it. We know exactly. We've been in the coal face of newspapers and that closing down at times. So it is very heartening to see that there are still very passionate individuals around there, that are sort of advocating for club rugby. And if you're listening to this, do yourself a favor. If you want to do something, go join a local club. Find a club near you, and just, you don't have to play rugby. You can just go have a beer there, or just take your family down and enjoy some of the rugby there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the media can play a big role. It's not as if you think of all the most media platforms have an online component to it, and that is not bound by space. That's obviously just the question of manpower that comes into play. So yeah. I think all around a lot more can be done. But let's move on.
Yeah. Yes, let's move on. There's a lot of rugby, as we're saying. There's a lot of rugby played. We're not going to focus on everything other than to say the fact that the Champions League, to me, there seems to be a huge gulf between maybe the top three and four teams and the rest. If you just look at the Toulon put on 70 this week, Toulouse played pretty shabbily in that first half against Sale. Sale really took it to them, but still won 38-15.
Yeah.
Leinster.
That's almost typical of them, though. Because they got all that fire.
And I mean, even Leinster, you look at the stats of that game against Harlequins. I mean, the same amount of carries, the same amount of the tackles, etc. It wasn't a one-sided game. And yet the scoreline was 62-0. It just, to me, there's quite a gulf between those top three or four giants in European rugby and some of the rest of the teams.
Mm. Good to see a bit of a resurgence at Toulon. People argue, well, they're one of those clubs that bought their way to prominence, you know, in the early 2010s. But, I mean, they built a fantastic club. What's it? Murad Bujlal under him. And although, I mean, they won the three Champions Cups in a row, they've lost some steam since then. And also, there have been significant financial cutbacks. And in fact, at one point, they lost Cheslin Kolbe. So they had to offload some pretty high-profile players. But it looks like they're bouncing back. And it makes for a fascinating clash against Toulouse. We will have to travel down to the south of France to see if they can make their way there to the semifinals.
Yeah, that's one of the two big clashes in the Champions Cup this week. I mean, that's a giant clash. I mean, and you know, I just want to make a point that you know people always talk about clubs buying their way in, and if you've got the financial muscle, why can't you buy the best players? There's a difference between buying a lot of stars and then making them into a team. It doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Yes, as we've seen many a time. So probably the best model is probably a hybrid of that, of developing your own local players and buying in some stars where you've got gaps. But yeah, that's a massive clash. The other big clash this coming weekend is, of course, Glasgow, Franco Smith. We're keeping a close eye on him, defending URC champions. Traveling to Leinster to face Jacques Nienaber and Leo Cullen's team. And that should be probably a preview of the URC final later this year. I know I'm not. Hopefully the South African team will upset that scenario, but that's very much a big game as well. And of course, in the Challenge Cup, there's not much South African representation left. The only ones left are the Bulls, and maybe we should first chat about that. Maybe first with the Bulls, just what impressed me most about them at Bayonne was that was just such a typical French crowd, was such a typical French performance. The players just got lost in every single, trying to argue every single decision with the referee. And what impressed me was that the Bulls kept their heads, they kept on focused, and they got the tries when they needed them, and they scored when they needed to, and they won the game.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that performance. Probably for me, their most accomplished performance this season. I know they've racked up bigger scores and run riot, but in terms of sticking to their guns, you know, keeping their composure, their game management by large words kept intact against opponents who obviously wanted to create a bit of chaos, create broken play and score from that, which they did successfully a couple of times, but not enough to really challenge the Bulls. I mean, once the Bulls, they fell behind, once they got the lead, I never got the impression that they were going to lose that game. So I think all around a very good performance. And though they scored some dazzling tries, at least two of those tries were quite memorable, you know, their defense, I think, actually won them the day, because you had opponents who were coming from all angles, egged on by a very passionate crowd, and the Bulls just stunted them. You know, there were times when people got knocked back properly and the Bulls were combative at the ruck. Yeah, it was just all around, I thought, a fine performance. We asked questions about their desire to, whether they really want to go deep in this competition, and I think their performance answered that emphatically.
Yeah, I think two points I want to make. One, Christopher Ridley, the referee, I must admit, I felt for him, because every single time he blew his whistle, it was almost like there was about three French players around him arguing the whole time. He stuck to his guns. He was very neutral. I thought that the Bulls that sang that.
He was owning up to his mistakes and owned it.
Exactly. But I thought the probably where the Bulls probably were a bit fortunate was with the TMO, because if you look at David Creel's try where the ball came off Stravino Jacobs' legs, the one replay seemed to show that Stravino's one foot was in touch when the ball touched him. There was only one angle, and which is strange for a French TV company that we didn't see 700 angles of the same thing. And the same with Jan-Hendrik Wessels' try, Marco Verstappen's try, where he reached out, it almost looked like he propelled himself with his legs. Now, I'm not saying they weren't tries. They very much were. We didn't get enough replays to really have a look, but
You're allowed to reach, but yeah, you're not allowed to propel yourself.
And another day with another TMO in front of a partisan crowd, you could easily see those decisions going the other way. But for once, they favored the Bulls, and they march on. I mean, they now have Edinburgh, Sean Everett, who another South African, who until recently was Jake's assistant there, coached the Curry Cup at the Bulls. Now, obviously, was it the Sharks before that? We'll know the Bulls players extremely well. The nice thing for me about their Bulls performance also was the performances of some of the older heads there who led from the front. Marcel Coutier, to me, was a clear man of the match. He was exceptional on the day. Akifuna Mava was very good. And if you think that some of the older players...
Except for his tackle. Having a little reckless. But again, that shows the spirit of the man. He did a lot to get there in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you just think of those, some of those performances, really a good day for the Bulls. And this weekend in Edinburgh, they won't be overawed.
You can take a lot of confidence out of last week's performance, but now there's the need to back it up. You know, can he do it 2 weeks in a row? And then can he do it, if you even get through this one, can he do it another week? So that's the question they need to ask themselves. I think they have a little bit in reserve in terms of they can actually make a few amendments in selection. They've got, there's some breathing space on that front. So I expect them to go guns blazing because, I mean, you don't play the way you did last week and not put in the effort the following week. So I think it'll be a close game. Edinburgh at home will be tricky. I think early in the season, they were a little bit off what we were used to. I mean, in terms of performance and form and so on. But I think they've regathered themselves quite nicely. So it'll be they'll be formidable foes in this game. It will be desperately tight. I don't see a particular team running away with this.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a catch-22 for the Bulls because the way their season's structured, that if they get through this one, their next two games are vitally important in their URC campaign. They play Munster, who, of course, had that amazing win at La Rochelle. Really, one of the great ones of European rugby. It was
stunning, but
hard-fought. Yeah. And then they go to Glasgow, who are defending champions. And, of course, they want to get points out of those two games. But if they win on Saturday, then the third week after that, after Glasgow, they stay for the semi-finals, which is, at this point, looks like it's probably going to be Johan van Graan's Bath, who they're going to face in the semi-final if they get that far. So it's a tough five weeks for the Bulls. And if they can make it through this 5 weeks, I'd say they pretty much could win both trophies if they win all these games. That's a huge ask.
Yeah, well, if you have to rank teams now, the teams that are left in the Challenge Cup, the Bulls would have to be in your top two, three. Well, I'd say top two, actually.
Yeah, I think Bath are a dark horse there, and they're just playing so well at home. And it depends, of course, how seriously they're taking it. But they had a big win at Pau, and they certainly look like they can go all the way as well. And, I mean, we've spoken to Johan van Graan on the spot. He's very ambitious. He likes winning trophies. And I'm sure they're going to be looking for this one as well because it would be the next trophy they want to win as well, as well as the Premiership title. So big one there. Just a word though, Liam, on the Lions and Sharks performances. Let's start with the Lions. I'm not going to say I was disappointed because I almost expected them to lose like that, but to start off and go 17-0 down, and never really looked like they fired a shot in that first half and then recover in the second half, but they were playing catch-up rugby, score a couple of tries at the end there that made the scoreline look better than it was. But there's some serious reflection needed at the Lions. And I saw one of the other websites this morning published a very, very detailed look at Ivan van Rooyen's coaching career. And that they've never gone above 50. He's never gone above 50% win record in 6 years. And it's quite a damning indictment if you read that. And you got to wonder why they stick with him if there's been no improvement in 6 years of coaching.
Yeah, it is increasingly difficult to get away from those stats. They played better past week than they did the previous week. But I mean, they start from a low base. That, in the aftermath of this defeat last weekend, the coach did talk about the character and the fight back and so on. But you can't just talk about that. You need to, at some point, address the wider issues. And it's that. And you know, I suppose you can't really put that on the coach to sort of put that at the forefront of the conversation, because it's the people higher up the food chain at the Lions that need to do that. If they're happy with a performance or win ratio of less than 50% from the head coach, then that says something of the ambition or lack thereof. I think we've used that word a couple of times when discussing the Lions. And, you know, they may yet make the top eight of the URC and tick that box. But as things stand, it is going to be devilishly difficult for them to do that. I mean, they'll have to go full house in terms of lot points to get to 50 points. And that doesn't guarantee them necessarily passage into the top eight. I think if they get to any, probably get in, but, you know, it's not a guarantee. I mean, also to get
a bonus point win in every game, every remaining game. It's they don't have the toughest draw, and they are at home. But even there, it'll be through the back door, and it doesn't really answer all the, you know, the teasing questions that I think.
Yeah, I somehow think that it'll be like putting a Band-Aid over a gaping wound in a way. That's maybe a bit of a harsh way of looking at it. But even if you, as you look at it, you say there's four games left, and we mustn't forget, it's easy to think that the Lions are going to play this wonderful rugby at Ellis Park. They haven't always played this wonderful rugby at Ellis Park. And the teams they're playing are also wanting a top eight place. So they put Benetton, who were very unlucky this weekend. That's their first one.
This is exactly why they can still make it if they win all four, because it's against teams that have similar ambitions that are higher than them. So taking points of all of them will be, well, you know, obviously stand them in great stead.
But vice versa. I mean, Benetton aren't coming just to make up the numbers. They were very unlucky in losing to Cust on the weekend. I don't know if you watched the game. There's a try in the 78.
Man, that was a real helter-skelter.
Yeah.
And what a game to watch. But so they're not going to be easy to beat. Then they have Connacht, who also had a big win this weekend against Scarlets, I believe, in the Challenge Cup. Then they've got Ospreys, who had a big win as well this past week. And then the last one is, I think, Dragons, which is it Dragons or Scarlets?
Scarlets.
Yeah, Scarlets. You'd back them to beat the Welsh teams, but saying that, Ospreys last season shocked them at Ellis Park and beat them in the Challenge Cup, put them out of the Challenge Cup. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we have to wait and see with the Lions, but I think even if they make the top eight, what does that mean? That they travel away to Leinster or Glasgow for quarterfinal or the Bulls, and that on this form, you can't see them winning any of those games.
It's a tall order, but yeah, I mean, there's... It's easy to poke holes into what they've done wrong. We can talk about the lack of depth. We can talk about the composition of the coaching staff. There's a lot of easy soft targets there, but it's something that the upper management, it needs to be front of mind. And if it's not now, I mean, I don't know.
And then the Sharks, what to say about the Sharks other than the fact that they'd lost that game before they got on the plane? Their whole attitude towards, I don't want to say attitude, maybe that's the wrong word, their whole approach to the game. With a young team like that. And I mean, I sat there and I had to write the match report as well in that game. And to me, it just felt if they had a better team, Leon weren't that good. And the trousers were soft. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we're going to use the word ambition. The Sharks have ambition. They've got proper ambition. If you speak to their owner, I mean, he wants to win the big trophies. There's no doubt about that. For this game, though, however, they decided, okay, we are in the URC basket, and they gave a couple of, I don't want to call them fringe players, but not necessarily players that will play every weekend. They gave them a chance in an interesting environment. So, you know, they'll take something out of it in terms of that experience. But, I mean, it's quite clear. You're right. I mean, even before kick-off, it was fairly clear that
who
focuses.
I mean, the clear thing was you could see those players hadn't played together. There was such a lack of cohesion amongst that short team.
Yeah.
And as I said, that wasn't a great Leon team. Yeah, I think the Bulls probably would have beaten them also in that form. Yeah, you could probably make a case for the Stormers would probably have won there if they had as well. And I won't say the Lions because we've just sagged them a bit. But, you know, this was a possible win for you. And that just decided, look, now the big thing for the Sharks is that you have to go on and win the URC. Because if you've done that now, that's your aim now.
I think it's probably also a case for the Sharks of like, well, we've won this thing. We're the defending champions. We've ticked that box. We want to tick another one this season. So, yeah, that's probably the attitude.
Yeah, there's the obvious thing about that is that it could backfire and you win nothing and then you sort of wonder afterwards. But that's the decision you've made. So
it's if you think about it, it's probably worth the gamble. I mean, it's the more difficult one to win now. But I mean, if you are ambitious, that's the way you should be thinking. You know, if the challenge is tough, well, that's what you've signed up for.
Well, I suppose time will tell, and we'll certainly be following them in the next couple of weeks. They've all got Lions and Lions Stormers and the Sharks all have a week off now this week to sit and prepare for the URC campaigns. Bulls are the only ones up this weekend. Early kickoff against Edinburgh and some huge games. They've obviously backing Franco and well, I suppose we have to. Doesn't matter. Who do we back? Leinster Glasgow, yeah? On that one.
Leinster Glasgow.
Yeah.
I say go Glasgow.
Yeah, I also think Franco, Beckham, although Jacques might have a problem with that if you chat.
No. If you're asking me who would I prefer to go through, I would say Glasgow. Whether they'll win them, of course, is a different matter. But
well, there's more so that
they have shown they can go to Ireland and get a result as they did in URC last.
That's a massive game. And then the Toulon-Toulouse game is going to be huge as well. There's a couple other games. They'll be live on Supersport, so we'll watch them this weekend. But that's it. That's our show today. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll chat to you next week.
We'll chat then. Yep.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacaranda.fm.com or the Jackpot app.